Hello, hello. Welcome to the first episode of the Adult Gamer Community Podcast. I'm Mellified, and I'm joined in hosting duties today by Fenrir765. Our community guest host tonight is Hoptimus, and we're mostly sober and entirely ready to discuss the last few weeks of video game news, the tag community, and some upcoming events. For those who don't know me, I'm Mellified. I'm a lifelong gamer. I tend to play as many games as I can, except all the sports titles. My favorites are definitely RPGs. So Fenrir, can you tell us a little bit about yourself for those who might not know you?
All I can say is I've been playing video games for ever since the Nintendo came home as a kid on a fun little sick day I had from school. But gaming is definitely something I've really enjoyed in life, and I've just enjoyed the fact that I've found the tag community to hook up with a lot of people who enjoy gaming as well.
Awesome. Hop, how about you, man?
Oh yeah, I again lifelong gamer. I don't know. I was 5 or 6 when I first played arcade, and then Atari, and we had the Pong thing, and then Odyssey 2, and blah blah blah. Then the Nintendo, and so on and so forth. It's always kind of been a footnote in my life. It's one of my recreational hobbies. I mostly like action games. Shooters, I like RPGs, I love co-op games. I'm also not big into sports games, but I do love like car racing, like the Forza, mostly the Horizon series. I'm more veering towards arcade style games. I'm more of a fast food gamer. I like games that I can pick up and play for a short period of time, or I can sit and play for a long period of time. I don't like games where I literally have to invest like 10 hours of my day to feel like I make any progress. So I tend to shy away from, at this time in my life, those kind of games because of my other responsibilities. And lately I've just been gaming on Xbox because that's been the platform that I've kind of stuck with for a while. And Xbox Live has always treated me pretty well. Other than that, I'm good.
I wanted to jump right into some news stories. Fenrir, you added this one to the show notes. Why don't you talk to us first?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think one of the biggest stories in the last few weeks is Sony skipping E3, and what does that really mean? And, I am no journalist or have connections in the industry. Obviously, I just sit on my couch and play video games every now and then. So, what does that really mean for the future of E3? What does that mean for, Xbox? Does that mean that they just now can run the gambit in June? I don't know. Like, recently, Xbox just had the XO event, and I watched some of that, and I thought it was pretty cool how they made it all about the fans and not about the outcome of, we're competing against anybody and trying to show off and be bigger than the next person. And they just kept dropping thing after thing, and a lot of really cool things came out of it. So, I mean, what do you guys think? Does this Sony thing, is it big news? Is it, or does it just mean, down the road we'll see them again and life will move on as whatever?
I know one of the things that I thought was interesting was they said they're skipping E3, but they also canceled their December or winter event, which seems to me to indicate it's not just kind of a one-off, that there's sort of a shift in strategy. I don't know. To me, Sony, we all know the next generation of consoles are coming in 2020. Sony's had some really great first-party titles lately. Maybe they just don't feel like they have anything to show until the PS5, presumably. Pop, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it just sounds like one of those things where they're just trying to kind of do like what Nintendo did. I think they just want to do their own thing. I'm not sure what it means if they're announcing a new console or what, or they're just maybe they figure the cost of showing up at E3 this year is not worth their involvement. Who knows? Like I said, I feel like they're trying to do something like Nintendo does, where Nintendo just puts on its own show and wants to be all about, their product and their stuff and not really competing. Side note, I just saw a story about Phil Spencer was saying that they're going to show up at E3 because that's where the world looks to see what's going on with electronics. So regardless of what's going on, Microsoft's going to be there to show what's going on with the Xbox division and their, of course, Windows division. So I don't know why Sony's backing out.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. One bit of minutia with the show is the way that the booth space is allocated. You basically are, what you get next year is based on what you did last year. So if Sony does decide to go back to E3, they're kind of at the back of the line as far as booth space goes, which might be an issue for them in the future. But maybe they're not planning on going back, I guess.
I don't know. I think it'd be really interesting, and I think kind of great for us as just kind of gamer fans. I love E3 and the fact that it's just news story after news story, and oh, this game, that game. Oh, that looks really cool. But, you know, I like the idea of things kind of being spread out a bit, not having 7 days of just straight news stories, you know, coming left and right. You might get from EA, from Ubisoft, from all the major players are just dropping all these stories. But now you can see Xbox is having their fan fest in, what was that, November? And, you know, they can drop a ton of news there, and they can drop a lot of really good stuff that all that focus can be there, and you can get that attention and go, man, that was really cool stuff. I can't wait for what happens when these games start coming out. Like, you know, Void Bastards was one of those games that came out at the XO event. I was like, man, that game looks cool. And that might have gotten lost in the shuffle at a giant expo that E3 is. So, you know, maybe things are going to start stretching out throughout the year. And, you know, we won't have just this one giant week of news.
Yeah, like you say, I think that might be probably a better thing for the industry. I'm going to move us on to the next story, though. It was announced that Fortnite has 200 million players. That is absurd, insane. It just seems a little crazy to me. Hop, what do you think? Is that, I know you're not a big Fortnite player yourself, but...
I tried the game. I wanted to love it. It runs really good. It's pretty if you like a more cartoony art style. I myself could not get into the building aspect of the Battle Royale part of it. I mean, the reason it's doing so well is their business model. It's like all those free-to-play cell phone games. I mean, the game's free. They make all their money on cosmetics. And, you know, if a kid can download a free game on his console of choice at home and play with his friends without having to bug his parents to buy it for him at the store, that's like the foot in the door. And then all he's got to do is tell everybody he knows, like, oh, can you give me, you know, whatever medium of choice point cards, whether it's PlayStation, you know, PC, Switch, Xbox, so they can buy the things they want for the game. I mean, honestly, you don't even need to buy anything. The game is pretty rocking and ready to go out of the box. You just kind of generic looking until you do that. But I can see why it's successful. It runs good. It looks fantastic. I mean, on the 1X, it blows the doors off of PUBG as far as performance. And they are using a similar, if not the same exact version of the Unreal Engine. So, like I said, it's not for me, but I can see why it's so popular and why it does well. They've really captured a market. It seems like the teen kids love that game. Love it.
I mean, what's the other game that put 200 million players out there?
I think maybe Minecraft is probably the only other one that comes to my mind.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where it... That's
still
exactly.
Pretty big. If they ever went free to play with that, that would probably explode too.
Yeah. But I mean, has it lost its luster? I mean, Fortnite is really kind of just dominated everything. I mean, I see it. I hear about it daily, every day from hundreds of kids. I mean, just the dancing is everywhere. I mean, you can't go to any place without seeing a kid doing the floss or the shoot or, you know, some random dance from Fortnite. And I mean, go to YouTube, look at the Fortnite videos of the just the dancing thing. I mean, half those things have millions of views just because kids sit there and watch it over and over again to learn how to do them. It's they have
It's a
found.
cultural.
Oh yeah.
Go ahead,
Exactly.
sorry.
No, you're hitting the nail on the head. Say it.
It's a cultural phenomenon. I mean, it's you know, there's always some fad, something that catches on, and right now it's Fortnite. I just wonder, you know, the same way after World of Warcraft came out, we had a dozen or more MMOs that tried to copy WoW in certain ways. I wonder if we're going to be subjected to the next 5 years being, you know, bad Fortnite clone and games that are free with a ton of cosmetics.
But the real question is, will Fortnite die? I mean, will it have the legs to keep going year after year? I mean, they haven't changed their map since they've come out.
No,
And
but it does randomize a little bit every time you drop. It's a
yeah,
little
it
that part's
evolves, I
kind of
guess.
neat. I like that. You know, and like I said, the one thing that maybe it's because it's Epic and they just have a better engineering team, but the game runs like butter, no matter if you're on a regular Xbox, Xbox One X, Nintendo Switch, PC, it just runs good. Even the portable version runs good. I watch kids play it on their iPhone and they're having fun. I'm like, wow, it really did something well, making sure that the game, it almost in a very Miyamoto type thing where the game always runs good, and that's what's important to them.
Very
And
much.
I think the teen rating can't be ignored. You know, I realized parental controls aren't always used, but I think a lot of parents, that's where they draw the line for their kids, you know,
Yeah, very good point.
between teen and M. So. All right, well, let's move on to a game that we'll be talking a little bit more about here soon. But Fenrir, you and I have both been playing this guy this week.
Yeah, Red Dead Online. It's definitely, it's been out, what, 5 days now, if you bought the Ultimate Edition. And then they had the staggered release based on if you bought the Ultimate Edition or if you played day one and then everybody else in the course of 3 days, which I thought was a really interesting mechanic for them to release a mode for a game. It's also it's considered a beta, so you know we won't see we'll probably see a lot of changes between now and whenever they drop the next patch for it. So you know they definitely are continuing that whole motif with GTA Online with you know microtransactions, you know buying gold bars to be able to then purchase items. You know, I have to say, I'm having some fun with it. It's definitely more fun when you play with others, but it's there's it also has its share of griefing. You can spend about an hour hunting, gathering your pelts, and then go to a butcher and just be murdered by three other guys who will steal your pelts and then sell it for you, sell it for their own gain. But no, it's interesting. You know that things will change and it'll definitely become a different animal a year from now. So I don't know what your thoughts are, Mel. You were me and you were playing together for a little bit and we definitely had some fun with a mission versus some other people. So
I was going to say, like, I think that's where the game both succeeds spectacularly and fails horribly, depending on your personality. The mission we were trying to do was, you know, capture three stagecoaches and get them back to a particular spot on the map. I mean, pretty basic fetch quest. But the interesting twist was other players could try to stop us and steal the stagecoach, and they would get points for doing that, or money or rewards, whatever. And we had a pretty good, you know, run with two other guys trying to steal the stagecoach I was driving, and Fenrir, you and another friend of ours had to come back and fight them off, and we like got the thing stuck, and we had to unstick it and got back with, I think, 5 seconds to spare, was
yeah,
it?
Definitely shout out to Fireman Batista. I mean, he knows how to ride a horse and shoot a gun.
Well, and
That
so
does
like
not surprise me.
that was super fun, but at the same time, like if you just want to go through and do some missions, the fact that other people can kind of get in your way, and essentially it's, the game is allowing them to grief you a little bit is interesting, and I'm not sure long term that's something I'm going to enjoy, I guess.
I will say though, the map is massive and there's so many towns and so many places to go to that, if you really wanted to, you could probably find a way to not engage with a single person on that server. I mean, I don't think there was more than like 25 people on the server, and that map could take you, I don't know, about an hour to ride across it. I mean, it's huge. And I honestly can't remember a game I played where that map, where their playing area is that large and you could not run into a single live player that entire time you're running around out there.
Good point. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how things progress with the beta. They haven't announced a release date, so it may be in beta for, 2 weeks. It might be in beta for a year. We don't really know at this point.
Oh, wasn't PUBG in beta for a year and a half?
So yeah, it'll be interesting to watch for sure. But I know there was a story kind of related to this where the game economy has kind of taken a hit. There's already been a few exploits found, people farming money pretty quickly. So it does raise the specter of a reset, progress reset during the beta, which is a little scary for those people who are investing a ton of time in the game.
Yeah. I mean, whatever happens at the end, I think that people need to keep their cool and just not, I don't know, blow the lid off because they decide to reset everybody back to square one after all that time. But I can't imagine they would do something like that that wouldn't also give you some kind of benefit or exchange of, hey, you've spent this much time, here's this amount of
Sure.
gold, so that way you're not just starting from scratch. But I mean, I don't know. People have done, game companies have done a lot of crazy things that have really upset people. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's not worth flaming the across the internet about, I can't believe they did this. I'll never buy one of a Rockstar product again. That's just stupid in my opinion. So
Well, and demonstrably false, right?
yeah.
People do say those kind of things, but yet, Red Dead was the best-selling game of all time in its opening weekend. So
I mean, heck,
clearly.
I said I wouldn't buy another Call of Duty game again, and we'll talk about how that's so wrong in a bit.
All right, well, for now, let's move on. Hop, you want to take us through our next story?
All right, where are we at? Fallout 76. Wow. I'm kind of shocked at how much of a shit show the stories have been. So honestly, when they first announced it, I was like, huh, I don't know about this. And I just kind of like just in my mind just put it aside. I was like, well, I'll worry about it later. I happened to game share with a very good friend of mine. He was like, dude, it's gonna be great. He loves all the Bethesda games, so he didn't have any worries. He was just like, all right, I'm buying it, you're gonna get it too, you're gonna play with me. I said, okay. So the game comes out. I didn't read any reviews. I didn't watch any previews. But I just started playing it. And within the first day, I had a lot more fun with Fallout 76 than I did with Fallout 4. But that could just be me. I think for me, the over handheld crafting aspect on Fallout 4 didn't sit well with me. I like Fallout 76 because it's bigger. I like the survival aspect, like you have to eat and drink stuff. That greatly affects your character. And you can play with your friends. Now, I've played for hours by myself and have had a good time. It's not perfect. It definitely needs some patches. There's some weird glitches that happen sometimes. Sometimes this game just will kind of crash. So there's that. I can sort of see the criticism with some of the things. Some people are lambasting the game for not having any human characters that are doing the stories, and it's all like sort of like told, you're almost like you're chasing ghosts and or you're dealing with bots and various AI. But the other facets of the game that are making the Fallout world bigger, introducing new things, being that this is sort of a prequel to Fallout 3 and 4, to me, I find it very interesting. I think if you're a Fallout fan that loves the lore and the series, you probably dig the game, especially if you got a couple friends to play with. And there's been much hilarity playing with some of the other regulars. Anthem and Kicked and Heartbreak and I have had some hilarious nights, and then some, oh my God, what just happened? kind of situations. If you're a fan of co-op RPG type games and you like the Fallout series, I think it's a must buy. If you're a casual Bethesda fan, you're not really into co-op games, I would probably stay away from it. I think it's fun. It, like I said, it has some bugs that need some patches, and they're already working on some of that stuff. So hopefully, I mean, it's Beth anybody that buys a Bethesda game that doesn't know there's going to be bugs at launch is just kidding themselves. Because I mean, come
That's the
on,
running joke, right?
right?
I mean, every game.
Every Bethesda game, but their games are huge. They run on a, kind of strange cobbled together super engine that, Todd Howard built, and it's always evolving. So,
Now, would you say that, Fallout 76 has this, I don't know, just early access kind of feel to it, or do you think that?
I don't, it's funny. I just feel like there's a lot of entitlement with the gaming consumer. I think that they are thinking that the game should be something else. What they want, they're projecting what they want onto a game when it comes out, when explicitly, like when, Bethesda or whoever announces a game, it can be any game. They announce a game, they announce the features, the game comes out, there's a public back cry if it doesn't have a feature that some other similar game had. And they're like, well, we never said it's going to have that feature. Like everybody just, the whole. It's not just gaming that I go on another tirade. The whole world almost feels entitled to things, and I think some of that is that people feel like they're entitled to, like, well, it should do this and it should do that, and that's what I mean by, if you're buying a Bethesda game, it's your first time. All right, I'll cut you some slack. You didn't know it was going to crash this bad. You didn't know it was going to have weird bugs that were going to take half your inventory when you left the game, weird things like that. But if this is your fourth or fifth Bethesda game and you're complaining, then that's on you, because you should know better.
I mean, I was also thinking about just, I was talking about Red Dead earlier and how people can just grief you constantly. I mean, Mel and I were in this kind of gun battle with this one random person over and over again. And eventually I just was, there was a parlay feature where you could pretty much cause a truce for about 10 minutes where they couldn't hurt you after about three deaths. Now, I know Fallout handles that much different when you run into other players where damage is just kind of non-existent in a PvP kind of world. What's
Yeah,
your.
I haven't been assaulted yet. What I understand is, like, if someone shoots at you, you have to retaliate back in order to start the exchange. Now, in the options, you can turn on a mode called pacifist mode, which is what I turned on because I was like, okay, I don't want to harass anybody. I just want to play. And that means, like, if I accidentally shoot somebody, it doesn't trigger that mode. From what I understand, though, it takes a lot of damage to kill somebody. Once you do, then you're marked on the map, and you get a bounty on your head, and other players will hunt you down. So far that hasn't interested me enough. Like I said, I've just been having fun. I mean, the game's world is 4 times bigger than Fallout 4. I haven't even come close to exploring all of it yet. There's places I can't even go because I've tried to follow Kicked in there. He's like, "Oh, just come where I'm at," and I just warp in there and I just get throttled because the enemies are way too strong for where I'm at right now.
Reminds me of going the wrong direction in Dark Souls and realizing.
Yes, yeah, and it's kind of resource. I wouldn't say it's like a. It has some resource management in that you have to keep tabs on your bullets and stuff. It's a lot more stingy with that stuff, but in some way that makes it feel more like you're surviving out here in the wilderness, which I kind of it strikes a good balance between being hard as, hard as nails, super survival mode, and then having fun survival mode. I'm enjoying it. But I
That's
can
awesome.
understand some of the backlash with it. I think, with friends, it's definitely fun. By yourself, it's pretty fun though too. There's a lot of new enemies and things in the game, and it's a decent looking game. It's not the best. I would My one big complaint, I hope they fix this soon, is the it's using, I'm gonna call it a fake HDR. It's not true HDR. Whatever they're doing to make it have HDR kind of makes the skyboxes look really crappy. If you turn off the HDR, they look great. So I think there's definitely a bug with the HDR.
Have you witnessed a nuclear explosion yet?
I was in a game when one went off, but it was across the map, and I didn't have a fast travel to go check it out myself. But yeah, I got some sort of achievement for just being in the game while it went off. So
All right.
yeah.
Radiation exposure.
Something like that. It was super loud. It was neat.
I played a few hours of Fallout 76, and I certainly agree with what you were saying, Hop. The one thing I'd add is, I think Fallout 76 is exactly what Bethesda said it would be. And the problem is that a segment of gamers had expectations that it was somehow going to be different,
Right. That's what I
and
mean.
they
That's
ignored, they ignored the information they were given and said, "Well, no, I want a Fallout game like this." And it's like, "Well, that's not what we're making." And I don't know how you communicate any better than Bethesda did, other than not calling it Fallout,
I think it's that gamer entitlement piece that Hop mentioned earlier. I mean, definitely feel like we're owed something because it's a favorite of a franchise. I mean, I feel like that was a big problem with Mass Effect Andromeda. I mean, it came out, yeah, it was a hot mess of a game in terms of bugs and things, but a lot of people just crapped on it because it didn't feel like a Mass Effect game, using air quotes there. I mean, it was frustrating. So I hope that Fallout definitely gets its due, and or Fallout 76 gets its due, because I mean, look at games today. They come out one day, and then a year from then, year from the day they come out, they're almost unrecognizable from what they were at the beginning. And hopefully it's for the better, like some games we've seen go through these transformations and all of a sudden become major players in their industry.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Well, let's move on in the interest of time. So, our last story tonight. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission will be looking into loot boxes. I was just thinking about this. I'm not so concerned with whether the FTC will do this or that or the other thing, but I was thinking about how loot boxes have changed games. And sometimes it's just a different way to get your rewards, right? I think Overwatch does a really good job where, hey, if you play the game, you'll get loot boxes, you'll get the stuff, and if you want to pay some money to speed that process up, we will happily take your dollar bills. But that's kind of one extreme. But as somebody who has played some mobile games, it's been interesting to contrast the other extreme where you can't make any progress without a loot box spending money. So, Fenrir, why don't you give us your thoughts?
I think, loot boxes are definitely one of those things that has had a lot of major backlash. Maybe backlash is the wrong word. It's definitely had its issues. I mean, I never played it, and I think Hop, you could probably talk about it, but Star Wars Battlefront 2 obviously had a huge issue with it. But I will say, in terms of loot boxes, one game that I do play regularly that does a good job with it is Halo 5. I mean, they only do cosmetics for PvP type stuff, but you can get some loot boxes that will give you some weapons and things for some of those PvE type things that allows you that opportunity to kind of be a little bit more efficient in those PvE worlds, but you actually don't affect the other players, so to say, other than helping them win the round. So I don't know. Loot boxes, I think they have their place and I think they could be done correctly, but I also have a hard time thinking about the whole like paying money for them without having an easy access to earning them within the game itself. So, Hop, what do you think?
Yeah, so like Overwatch and Halo 5 are how I would like to see loot boxes handled, or and even Gears of War 4 to an extent, where it's mostly just cosmetic. You can earn points in the game to buy them, but if you wanted to, you can pay cash and get your cosmetics quicker. They're not game-breaking things. I was at this time last year, like, beyond excited for Battlefront 2. I mean, it, I played the beta, it was fun, the graphics were amazing. I want to say, I can't remember the exact time, I think it was out before now last year, right around this time. I think it came out no late November last year. We'd have to look it up. Anyway, that was a game where the loot box system screwed everybody, because if you wanted to, it was pay to win. If you bought a ton of loot boxes early on, you could unlock everything, and it just gave an unfair advantage. I mean, Sith and Anthem and I were just like, what the f-? Like, right away, it was obvious who spent a ton of money on loot boxes, because they had all the perk cards, and it was ridiculous, and we all kind of threw in the towel on that because of that. And then later on, they're like, oh, we're fixing that, whatever. By that time, I don't know, I think they lost half of the players that cared about the game. I uninstalled it a few months ago, and it makes me sad that I spent money on that game, because I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and they screwed us pretty bad. And it makes me weary of EA games with loot boxes. If they're cosmetic like Halo 5 or Overwatch, I'm okay with that. And I think that those kind of loot boxes have their place, but game-breaking balanced loot boxes don't. And it kind of sucks at Battlefront 2. It's probably going to have the shortest lifespan of a Star Wars multiplayer game ever. And I'll get off my soapbox on that now.
Well, the one thing I'll add, I think the most likely outcome as a very casual, observer of these things is that the FTC will add labeling requirements. So you'll have to, as a developer, they would have to put on some of the odds information. That's the kind of thing I would think the FTC might be, looking to do.
Great. I just see it getting a huge email after you buy games with like just these massive list of the chances of this item being here and this item being there.
Yeah, that's probably what we're talking about. Yeah, unfortunately, if I had to guess, that's how the government thinks things are fixed, right?
Mean, I think at the end of the day, I think, I don't know, like, was it Belgium was one of the first countries to really attack loot boxes? I mean, I would have to dig back down. Like, I don't entirely remember what actually happened with that, but I mean, it's obviously becoming an epidemic across the world. I mean, people are, spending tons and tons of money on it, and they make them cheap enough in a way to earn to pay for the points that you could spend these micro transactions to get them. But at the end of the day, all of a sudden you're $600 in the hole for something and you don't even know how you got there anymore. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I think it'll be really interesting to watch. Even the threat of regulation sometimes causes, companies and the industry to clean up their act. And in fact, the one of the game industry trade groups came out and said we need to all work together to make loot boxes better.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how this kind of plays out in the coming months.
I don't know. I think Fortnite does something pretty well with their microtransactions in the sense that if you want something, you can just buy it directly. But the thing you're buying also doesn't change how the game is played. It just changes the way you look. Now, I mean, I've been hearing and reading about some of these things where some of these skins in Fortnite is pushing $20, and that just sounds insane to me. But you know, as long as we get to a point in time where the loot boxes don't change the spirit of the game that is being created in terms of playing and playability, I think loot boxes have a way of existing with the way that we play games.
Yeah, well, let's hope that the specter of regulation causes some things to improve in that respect.
Yeah, I was gonna say one of the games that I really loved the way they handled, it wasn't even loot boxes, it was just microtransactions that were optional cosmetics, and they were affordable, and you felt like buying them, you were just giving like a bonus to the guys that made the game for like a weekly beer run or something. Titanfall 2 had a phenomenal, cheap, excellent cosmetic. I was like, oh, this is $5 for this whole pack of skins and camo. Yes, I'll
Oh
take
yeah.
that. It was awesome. I was like, I will gladly give you $5. Oh, you mean I get all of this for $5? I would rather have sort of like Fortnite does, where it's straight up, this is what you're paying for. Than to have the loot boxes where, okay, there's a chance you're going to get this, there's a chance you're going to get this, or there's a chance you're going to get a box of dog poop. I don't want the box of dog poop. I'd rather pay for what interests me just right
Yeah.
off the bat.
I mean, I think an interesting thing is another big game that's coming out next year is Anthem. And they've already come out and said that, you know, all DLC in terms of like playable DLC, story DLC is going to be free. And so somehow they're going to pay for this development of those things. So it's got to be some kind of microtransaction based. And I think with it being developed or pub the publisher being EA, you know, they're not going to do the same thing they did with Battlefront, so they got to figure out a different way of doing it. So I think they're going to go that more straight microtransaction route where you can just maybe buy a specific, I think they're called javelins, the suit of the flying suits that you wear, but you can buy a new one as the game goes on that has different abilities for maybe $2 or $3 or whatever they want to charge you. But I don't know. It will be definitely really interesting to see how games, especially major publishers like EA, who took a huge licking from the public eye, how they respond and develop games going forward.
All right, well, that's a great discussion, guys. I think we'll have more to talk about in the future on this topic too. Let's go on to our releases and updates. We're gonna try and keep the discussion to a minimum. I don't think most of these will be too exciting, but I'm gonna take us through some of the recent releases. We had Darksiders 3 come out. That's continuing the story of the Four Horsemen with Fury. As she tries to destroy the seven deadly sins, it's kind of an action adventure, God of War style game. They've got a 60, 80, and $100 edition of this one. My German accent's gonna be terrible, so I'm gonna do my best with this one. Achtung, Cthulhu Tactics. I've been actually playing this one. It's a turn-based tactical strategy game, kind of along the lines of XCOM. Where you fight Nazis who have some of the H.P. Lovecraft monsters on their side. And it's a pretty modest $25. And we've got My Little Riding Champion. Now, this is the only game challenging Red Dead Redemption 2 for the coveted Horse Butt Simulation Game of the Year award. I'm super excited to see, you know, how these two game companies can one up each other in the weeks and months to come with updates.
Think everybody's streaming that on Twitch?
I'm sure somebody must be. I mean, obviously, I was putting this one in as kind of a joke, but somebody's playing it. I mean, they wouldn't make it if they didn't think they could sell it. So, Eternal card game. This is a mobile and PC kind of collectible card game like Magic or Hearthstone. One of the nice things is the Xbox version has cross-platform progression with the PC and mobile editions. It's a free game, although there's a ton of microtransactions. You can buy all kinds of stuff, card packs and upgrades and cosmetics and so on and so forth. So be forewarned. And then the last kind of highlight of the week was the Ride, or excuse me, Ride 3, which is a motorcycle track racing simulator. They have a $50 and an $80 bundle for that one. Benner, how about you? Can you take us through the upcoming releases?
Yeah, sure. Thronebreaker, The Witcher Tales, single player RPG game, with some Gwent game tie-ins. You can get this for about $30. Gwent is also re-releasing after spending many months in the game preview. I can't tell you how often I've played Gwent just in The Witcher 3 alone, but I honestly, I heard about Thronebreaker and I want to look into this game a little bit more, and because I love The Witcher 3, it was definitely a lot of fun to play. Override, Mech City Brawl. Apparently it's a fighting giant mechs in a city, four player co-op, control different paths of your mech. There's $30 and $40 for a deluxe version. Just Cause 4, Rico is back destroying things for freedom. Jump, grapple, and wingsuit around a huge open world, blowing things up. Multiple versions, any ranging between $60 and $100. I'm sure many people have seen the giant tornado that Rico is just jumping up through. That game is just one of those mindless fun games. I've had a lot of fun in Just Cause 2 and Just Cause 3. I imagine this game will continue to do the same and just improve upon the formula that they've created in those first three games. Battle Princess Madeline. Malphite, I'll let you kind of.
Sure, this is one I actually kickstarted. It's a developer in Canada. His daughter was telling him what to draw. He was an artist, and so she was coming up with all these crazy monsters, and sort of that inspired them to make a Ghosts and Goblins style game. It's $20. It's really cute. If you imagine Ghosts and Goblins with a female princess character and some wacky monsters, I mean, I think you got this one nailed, so.
Ghosts and Goblins was a game back then. A lot of fun.
Yes.
All right. I guess we'll get going with our Games with Gold and Game Pass. Hop, tell us what you can get for Game Pass and all that money we spend on Live.
What do we got? This is interesting. You guys, I'm excited because we got on the Game Pass Gardens Between. I haven't played Mutineer Zero December 4th, Strange Brigade December 6th. That's that game you guys have been playing, right?
Yeah.
That sounds pretty interesting. So I'm really excited for that. Games of Gold Cube 2. That looks kind of neat. I say this about a lot of games of gold. I'm like, oh, that looks kind of neat. I never play half of them. Dragon Age 2, that's cool. It's interesting. There's a huge following for the BioWare games. I only really loved Mass Effect 2 and 3. Maybe I should try Dragon Age 2 and see if I can get into the Dragon. My first Dragon Age game was Dragon Age Inquisition. It just didn't do much for me. Never Alone is, let's see, what's that one? That's another Xbox One.
It was made in conjunction with the native people in Alaska, kind of
Okay, yeah,
using some of
that.
their folk tales.
Right. Okay, I was like trying to remember, and I was like, aha. And then Mercenaries, which I remember being hugely popular on the original Xbox.
It was an awesome game.
Yeah, it's nice to see them bring in some of those vintage original Xbox games into Games with Gold. That's pretty awesome.
Is this the first one they've done that with?
New backwards compatibility. Oh, AVP, that was Aliens vs. Predator. That was really fun. I never played Kingdoms of Amalur: The Reckoning, and I also never played Sonic. There were many years where I ignored the Sonic games because I felt like Sega didn't know what they were doing with them. But thankfully, I have Sonic Mania now, so that's all good. Xbox One X enhancements for Rocket League, finally. That's nice. Batman Arkham Trilogy got them, and I'm not hearing lots of good in the Reddit verse, but again, this is gamer entitlement, possibly. I have not seen it myself yet.
I will say Kingdoms of Amalur is definitely a really great game.
I remember it got like people talked about it a lot. I just never. There was a period where all I did was play Gears of War and or Borderlands. I skipped a lot of other games.
Yeah. Well, Kingdoms of Amalur was done by 38 Studios, which was Kurt Schilling's
Right,
game studio
yep.
that went bankrupt in Rhode Island, pretty much lost $75 million because they loaned it out to him to develop this stuff.
Nice.
So, but it's also interesting because it was just recently, the IP was just recently picked up by, oh, I'm drawing a blank.
I think THQ Nordic,
Did they pick it up?
I think,
I thought it was
but
Gearbox.
oh, maybe I could be wrong about that.
Anyway, it's got picked up, which could be awesome because it's such a rich culture. I'm also interested in maybe going back and checking out the book that it's based off of. So,
I didn't even realize there was a book. That's really cool.
yeah, I know nothing of it, but I do know there's a book. There's a author, Salvatore something or the other, but
Oh,
he's.
yeah, R.A. Salvatore. Yeah, he's written a ton of Star Wars and D&D books. He's big time in the writing science fiction fantasy world. Big time.
All right, so I guess he has a pedigree for it, so I will definitely need to check it out.
Yeah, something to look for. So rounding up, I have some games that have been updated. Assassin's Creed Odyssey had a 1.10 and then a follow-on 1.11 patch. The big thing that was really interesting, they added a mastery system. So as you play through the game, your extra skill points can go into special bonuses. They're similar to the engraving on your weapons that you can do, but they're permanent to your character. They stay with you. So this really adds a lot of long-term playability to the game, which I'm thrilled by because I'm up to 95 hours or so in the game and still really enjoying it, going strong. Next, we have World of Tanks Mercenaries. They have added a commander mode where one player can kind of look down on the whole map and give help and instructions to the other players. Battlefield's had this off and on for some of the series I know. And I always thought it was really interesting, but I was never particularly good at it myself. Let's see. Strange Brigade, in addition to coming to Game Pass, as Hop let us know about, they've added a photo mode as well as an extreme difficulty mode, and they're releasing the final chapter of their thrice damned paid DLC. So there's a lot of extras there. I think that's probably why they got it into Game Pass because they're hoping to sell some of that season pass content. Hop, since you're our special guest this week, can you tell us what you've been playing recently?
Recently, I have a couple addictions, one of which, Fallout 76. That's one of those games where I start playing, I'm like, I'll play an hour, and like 4 hours go by, I'm like, oh my God, I need to go to bed. The other one that's been doing the same thing, and I've been playing it a lot with Fenrir, is the Call of Duty Black Ops 4, the Blackout mode. I love it. It took everything I liked about Fortnite and everything I liked about PUBG's Battle Royale modes, put them together, so I get the realistic kind of look of PUBG, but it runs really smooth like Fortnite, and it's a lot of fun. And it has a little bit of goofiness, like it's got the zombies in it, which is cool. I just love that it has a little bit of, its own thing. It looks really nice on Xbox One X, and it runs great. I've been playing a older game, Castlevania: Mirror of Fate HD, which was originally a DS game. Then they did an HD version on the PS3 and 360. It recently went backwards compatible. And in my jonesing for Castlevania, I started playing that after I read a review, and it was on sale like 2 weeks ago, really cheap. Halo on Thursdays, mainstay, either MCC or Halo 5. And then I have not played much this week, but I still am really enjoying Forza Horizon 4 just because it's completely engrossing and beautiful in 4K HDR. That would probably round out my what I've been playing lately list.
I gotta say, that Call of Duty Blackouts, you just nailed it completely with your description of it. That's been the top of my list for games I've been playing. My name's Fenrir. I'm addicted to Call of Duty Blackout.
Yeah,
It's
we played for like 3 hours last night. I was like,
oh my
oh, I gotta
God.
go.
Yeah. It's just it I never play many battle royale games. I tried Fortnite, just couldn't get into the building thing, and that just killed me. But the and I never played PUBG because I am sorry, all you out there listening. I'm still playing on the OG Xbox, just holding on tight, waiting for
Hey man,
Scarlet to come out.
you know what? That's not your fault. I'm sorry. I liked PUBG, but part of the problem with PUBG is they could not get their ass together to make the game run good. So
That's
don't
true.
apologize for that.
All right. Well, anyways, I'm still playing on the OG, so PUBG just does not work for me at all. So Blackout on Call of Duty Black Ops has just been fantastic. And when you get down to the final like five or six people or teams, I mean, your heart starts pumping, the palms start getting sweaty. I mean, it's definitely a lot of fun, so I enjoy it. Some other games I'm playing a lot of Red Dead 2. Still working on the single player. It is a massive game. Loving it though. Try dipping my toes into the online world and seeing what that's about here the last few days. Mel and I have been playing a lot of Strange Brigade. About one day a week, we get on there and run through a mission, and it's definitely a lot of fun. I mean, it's got its Vermintide kind of raid puzzles, things that you can kind of do throughout, these massive levels that definitely take some time to get through, but has kind of a really cool story slash narrator overarching feel to it. And then the last game that I found as a nice palate cleanser, just kind of a good staple to have in my catalog of games I played, is Diablo 3. Really enjoy been running around with Mel and Hop these last few months. We haven't been on in a while, but hopefully this week we can find some time to round out our characters for before the season ends. So that's about it for me.
Well, I mentioned earlier how much in love I'm with Assassin's Creed Odyssey I am. That's continues to be something I'm playing a lot of. I'm going through the story, doing all the side quests. It for me is the perfect blend of RPG elements, story, and action. I found Red Dead to be excruciatingly slow. And so I much prefer Assassin's Creed Odyssey, being a little faster paced, a little bit silly sometimes even. You can jump off the highest mountain in Greece and not, roll your way down the hill and not die, but that makes it fun. So definitely recommend it to anybody. Octoon Cthulhu Tactics, I mentioned as a new release. I played the first four or five levels. I finally got to see a Cthulhu monster or a Lovecraft monster in the last mission, so it's took a few missions to get there, but it's interesting. It has a very familiar kind of tactical gameplay, but the part of it that I really enjoy is The strategy of figuring out, where to place my guys, how to optimize their special abilities, things like that. As you level up your characters, you unlock some new things. As you beat certain missions, you get special items that can affect your characters in different ways. So, enjoying that so far. Starlink Battle for Atlas is a nominally a kids game, I guess. It's an Ubisoft made, Ubisoft style open world game, but you're flying spaceships. And it's a Toys to Life game, but if you buy the digital deluxe version, you kind of get all of the digital versions of those physical toys, so you don't actually have to buy any of the toys. It's fun in the same ways that Assassin's Creed Odyssey is fun for me, where there's, a decent story, a variety of things to do. You can fly all over the galaxy. There's about 9 or 10 different planets, different sectors, that you can go to. They're all different environments, things like that. So really, really enjoying that one. It's a fun one I can play co-op with my kids too, although it is only local co-op. And then briefly just played Eternal, the card game Eternal, that we mentioned earlier a little bit. There's a fairly lengthy tutorial. It felt like I was playing Forza Horizon 4 again, for the 8th or 9th mandatory card match that you had to do to get through the tutorial. But it's interesting. They do some things that are a little bit different than Hearthstone in terms of the way the mechanics play out. I'm a little underwater with all of the card games right now between Gwent, the Bethesda one, Elder Scrolls Legends, which should be coming here to Xbox early next year, I believe. And then a little bit of Hearthstone, and of course Fable Fortune, which is the Microsoft Xbox exclusive card game. So no shortage of free card games to play, that's for sure. And last but not least, Fenrir mentioned Strange Brigade. I was just going to add, I think my favorite thing about playing Strange Brigade is the narrator. They manage to record great lines for him, and they play them at just the right moments. You're facing a bunch of enemies, and he'll make some pithy quip that just cracks me up and keeps it light and fun. So. All right, well, so moving on, how about some community updates? Pop, can you tell us what's going on?
Well, for a long time, Monday night was a Forza night, especially during Horizon 3 and even Forza 7. For some reason, on Horizon 4, I think we all binged really hard on it, and maybe we need to get a Monday night going again. And we've also rotated it out, like a nominating a Monday game in the Xbox Gaming Game Night channel on our Discord. I think usually around this time of year, because of the holidays, shopping, stress, families, kind of goes out the window. I'll see if we can maybe get something going again. I'd love to, since Forza's kind of past its brand new stage, maybe we can do a Monday night thing and keep the game burning a little longer, kind of like we do with Halo Night.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be awesome to get Forza rolling again. I definitely fallen off the bandwagon with that. So, we can definitely set things we have. We can get that going again. That'd be awesome. But Halo Night, speaking of that, is on Thursdays. Definitely a lot of fun this last Thursday since I've been doing Halo Night with Tag for the last few months. It's been definitely the most amount of people.
We had a lot. We
Yeah,
had
we
a
did.
lot. Halo Night's what brought me to Tag. So I have loved Halo since the beginning. I've been in three other gaming, adult gaming kind of communities. And a mutual friend of mine, Rockin' Yankee, who's in Tag, he sent me an invite one night. He's like, "Hey, come play Halo on Thursdays with these guys. They're really cool." That was my first night playing with Tag. I wasn't actually a member of Tag. I signed up the next day. And that was 4 or 5 years ago. I think my sign-up day was N7 Day, November 7th.
Oh, wow.
But like 4 or 5 years ago, I signed up with Tag, and I've been with Tag ever since because of Halo Night. And I love Halo, and I love the fun we have, and that people, you know, have a good time, and we drink beers, and, you know.
It is a good time. And I mean, especially once we get enough people where we get a good custom lobby going. Hopefully MCC fixed their custom lobbies.
Yeah, that was a little rough last week, but
it was. But I have a feeling eventually one day we will all play Halo with no problems. No problems at all. So just to make Link happy, of course.
Right.
So Mel?
All right. So one of the other neat things that we have at TAG going on is the book club. Every month we randomly select someone who participates in book club to pick a book club or pick a book for a book club. And right now this month, through the end of December, we are reading Legionnaire by Jason Anspach. This is actually one of my most favorite books of all time. I'm going to try and read the description of the book here briefly. The galaxy is a dumpster fire, a hot, stinking dumpster fire. And most days, I don't know if the Legionnaires are putting out the flames or fanning them into an inferno. A hostile force ambushes Victory Company during a reconnaissance in force deep inside enemy territory. Stranded behind enemy lines, a sergeant must lead a band of survivors against merciless insurgents on a deadly alien world somewhere along the galaxy's edge. With no room for error, the Republic's elite fighting force must struggle to survive under siege while waiting on a rescue that might never come. When you think you've surrounded the Legion, you've just made your last mistake. The thing that's interesting to me about this series, I think there's about 10 books and then some spin-off novels, is that it's taking the ideas of Star Wars and remixing them. It's kind of like if you told a friend about Star Wars and then they use that to make a whole new universe.
Sure.
There's some familiar ideas, there's some familiar kind of character types, but it's a unique story and it goes kind of its own direction over the course of the series.
But are there midichlorians?
There are not midichlorians. But
I'm out.
Okay, fair enough. But if this sounds interesting to you, you can come join us in the book club channel on Discord. Like I say, we pick a new book every month, and we'll be reading this one through the end of December, so you have some time to jump in.
How does that work? Do you guys just like chat about it as you read, or?
We usually have kind of a deadline where we try and read the book by, you know, midway through the month. And then at that point, the conversation is open for anybody who wants to talk about, you know, their thoughts. And we just chat about the book from there.
All right.
It's very casual, very low key, very low pressure. People have, you know, certainly skipped certain months if it didn't appeal to them or if they were just busy. So in putting this podcast together and kind of talking to everybody, one of the things that I thought would be really interesting is to kind of do a deep dive on a particular subject each episode. And this being our first episode kind of towards the end of the year, I thought it would be a perfect opportunity to talk about our favorite games of the year. Now, I say favorite games of the year rather than game of the year. That's such a loaded term and it has so much baggage attached to it. I much prefer, you know, us talking about our favorite games of the year. And as we are kind of preparing for the show, in talking about it, we kind of came to the realization that, you know, especially in the days of Game Pass, backward compatibility, and games as a service, you know, we just spent some time talking about, games getting big patches and big new features, you know, after release, your favorite game of the year might not be a game that came out this year. It might be a game from 2 or 3 years ago or 5 years ago, something that just hit backward compatibility. So this favorite games of the year list may not be what you'd expect from, you know, some of the other gaming sites out there. But I think this kind of works for us, and it kind of fits the way that we game ourselves, and certainly the way a lot of tag plays games. So I'd like to pass it off to Fenrir and have you kick us off. I know I'm first on the list, but I just spent way too long talking. I'm gonna let you go first.
We're all good. I definitely think that one of my games, favorite games of this year is Far Cry 5. I know I just gushed all over Black Ops 4, the Blackout mode specifically, and that's definitely up there. But Far Cry 5 was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the setting of it being in the United States and Montana, specifically the fictional county of Hope County, and this kind of like Waco, Jim Jones cult type thing going on. It was definitely a really cool vibe. And I don't know, Far Cry just does a good job of making bad guys that are just bad guys, and you want to kill them. You just want to go
Yeah,
out.
they're bad guys you love to hate,
Yeah, you just
I
want to hunt
think.
them down and take them out. So, I really enjoyed it, and the ending of it, wanted it. I wanted to go into therapy after I had the ending of that game. So, you know, it definitely is a great game. So, Hop, what's your favorite game of the year so far?
Oh. You know, as much fun as I'm having with Blackout on Black Ops 4, the game that just it literally came out of left field. So years ago, Iga, who was the lead designer on Castlevania Symphony of the Night and the designer of all the really good Nintendo DS Castlevania titles, all the 2D quote unquote Metroidvania, Castlevania games really have come from him. He left Konami because Konami said nobody's interested in these 2D games. So he left and he started his own company. They did a Kickstarter for Bloodstained: Ritual of the Night. It was one of the fastest Kickstarters ever. I backed it for the Xbox One. And one of the bonuses was if they hit a certain tier, you were going to get a retro-inspired game in the same universe. So fast forward a couple years, I completely forget about this, right? My buddy sends me a message on my phone with the YouTube trailer for the Bloodstained Curse of the Moon. And I watch the trailer, I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing, because it's basically a very 8-bit inspired 2D Castlevania clone, because that's really what the Bloodstained series is. I mean, it's Iga, the
Yeah.
He wasn't the creator of Castlevania, but he kind of took the helm. And it came out, and I just fell in love with the game. It was so fun. It looks like a game that could have been on the Nintendo, but not really, because it has a little bit more color. It has a little bit. The sprites move faster. The scrolls move better. But it kind of has the color palette of an 8-bit game. But it was a lot of fun, and it has multiple endings and multiple ways to play through, and that was just a surprise for me. Other than that, this year we've gotten lucky with like the Sega Genesis collection and the Street Fighter collection, and I'm just a fan of retro gaming. So there's lots of cool retro games to play. I was really looking forward to Crackdown 3 being out this year, but it's being pushed out till next year. So if we do
February
another one,
15th.
yeah, if we do another one of these in February, we'll see how that goes, because I really enjoyed the first Crackdown game a lot. Not the second one was okay, but the first one was really good, and I hope that that same spirit is in the new one. But yeah, that Bloodstained Curse of the Moon just it struck an itch that I forgot I had, and it I like sort of a very tough, old school side-scrolling action horror game.
How would you compare Bloodstained: Curse of the Moon to Symphony of the Night, which is kind of the gold
So they're
standard, I think.
different. Curse of the Moon is a lot more like Castlevania 1, 2, or really 1, 3, and 4. It's pretty much a
Okay.
linear kind of, and it's most similar to Castlevania 3 because it's not totally linear in the fact that you gain allies, you can switch on the fly. There's a neat story element though. Once you beat the game and you play the second playthrough, you lose one of the characters permanently because I don't want to spoil anything. Let's just say you won't be able to use that character and you have to play through the game with the remaining three characters. So it's most like Castlevania 3 in that aspect. I would say it most resembles that entirely. Whereas the full game that's going to come out supposedly next year, Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, is going to be a lot more like Symphony of the Night, a big open Metroidvania style exploration game on
Would you say
more.
that? I was gonna say, would you say that character had some bad sushi?
I'm not. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was just giving them a plausible reason for them not to be there. I don't know.
Well, is Bloodstained Curse of the Moon available separately from the Kickstarter at this point, or is
Yes.
that
So if you
okay?
backed the Kickstarter, you got it for free. Anybody else can buy it. It's, I think, $9.99, and it's available on Steam, Switch, Xbox, and PlayStation.
Fantastic. All right, I'm gonna backtrack for a second and just add to Fenrir's Far Cry 5 commentary a little bit. I really enjoyed Far Cry 5. I think the gunplay in the game and the sort of emergent gameplay, where that's the buzzword, I guess. Anything can happen when you go and try to take down an outpost. A cougar could show up, or a bear, in the middle of your firefight. You might be trying to go for stealth and mess it up, and crazy things happen. And that's the fun of the game, for me. The setting, the humor, definitely, shines with Turk in particular. I didn't enjoy the DLC as much as I had kind of hoped to. The Mars mission I found a little bit tedious, but and the ending is not great, we'll say. But gosh, what a journey to get there! And the caches where you go underground into the prepper caches and try and get more loot are some of the most fun, puzzly type gameplay I've played in a long time. So.
I mean, they just did a good job with the bad guys. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I will say it's one of those games that I'm glad I got a somebody convinced me that I really should play it.
Good. Well, yeah, I definitely really enjoyed that one as well.
I just
But the
want
game.
Far Cry Blood Dragon 2. That's
Oh, that's what I'd
Oh.
want. That would be awesome.
Did you play Trials of the Blood Dragon?
I played a little bit of it. I played almost halfway through. I
Okay.
did like the tie-in to the original game, but I didn't like it as much as Blood Dragon itself.
Sure. Well, yeah, completely different, style
Right,
of game. But the story, just the voiceover with Michael
yeah, dude,
Bayne,
I got so
just
excited. I
like.
was
It's like I'm watching Terminator again.
Right.
Oh my gosh, this is so crazy. Such a fun game. So my pick, I alluded to, or I gushed a little bit earlier, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. For me, it's the perfect mix of action and gameplay, a decent story, interesting characters. You get a boat, you can upgrade the boat, you can blow stuff up with the boat. You get a super cool character, you get all kinds of different weapons, and depending on the weapons, you have different attacks. But it's the same, basic controls, so you don't have to memorize hold left trigger and then don't hit right trigger, hit Y because right trigger will blow your horse's head off in some other games. The horse comes right up to me when I call it, and I can actually hold down the whistle button and I will jump on the horse automatically and start riding in Odyssey. Like, it's just a much more streamlined, fast-paced game, with some interesting sci-fi, ancient civilization kind of storyline.
Would you
So,
say that somebody who hasn't played an Assassin's Creed game ever, or maybe not for a while, in terms of the last few generations of Assassin's Creed, could they
this
pick
is a
this up?
perfect standalone game.
Okay.
I don't think you, it, because it's a prequel, like the Assassin's Guild hasn't even been formed. So it's very light on the Assassin's Creed lore. I would say Origins might be worth playing first, even though Assassin's Creed Origins takes place after Odyssey in the timeline, only because Ubisoft very clearly took things that they did in Origins and made them bigger and better for Odyssey. So I think if you go back and play Origins, you might be a little disappointed because it's going to feel a little bit smaller in terms of the scope. But both of them could be a great entry point into the series. And if all you played was Odyssey, I think, you'd be pretty pleased with it.
And Origins is a great game. I mean, I really enjoyed playing it last year. I just haven't gotten around to Odyssey yet, so it's definitely on my list of games to get to.
Yeah, I mean the last Assassin's Creed I really got into was Black Flag, their piratey kind of one, and I think this is even better than that was because Black Flag still stuck you in these forced stealth missions and some of the other trappings of the Assassin's Creed universe, so or hit games of the past. So I would unreservedly recommend as Odyssey, definitely a favorite. Did you want to talk about Call of Duty Black Ops anymore, Fenrir, or you feel like we covered that?
If you're on the fence, just get it. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I don't even know what else to say, Hop. I mean, you can play the game however you want to, and it's fun.
Well, let's talk about the price tag for a second. I mean, this is the most expensive battle royale game if that's
But it's
what
not
you're
just Battle
in for.
Royale. I mean, you got zombies and you have the traditional multiplayer.
Well,
And
but I mean, Mel's got a point. If you're only interested in Battle Royale, it is the most expensive Battle Royale
sure.
because it's a $60 minimum unless you caught it on sale for 45 or whatever it was on the
That's true.
Xbox like a week ago. But yeah, I mean, like I was saying earlier, PUBG is or Fortnite's free. It'll give you a taste of what a battle royale is, and then PUBG is averages for around 30, but it's in Game Pass now, right? Or
Yeah.
it's going to be soon.
Oh, it's in Game Pass now.
Right. I mean, having played all three, Blackout's my favorite because it is a bit of a more realistic battle royale like PUBG, but it runs smooth and efficient like Fortnite, and it's a lot of fun. And I, like you said, you get that hand sweat, heart pounding thing that I would get from PUBG. I never really got that much with Fortnite because most time in
Nah.
Fortnite I was dying because somebody built a tower in front of me and I couldn't shoot them. That would just make me angry. Yeah, I mean, the rest of Black Ops 4 is really well done. Also, the zombies mode is, I mean, it's great. It's a lot of fun. It's tough figuring out some of those levels. The regular PvP seems par for the course for the series. It's fun. It's very frantic. If you're not a young kid with Twitch reflexes, you're probably gonna die a lot. But visually, it's still very amazing looking. Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably the best Call of Duty release in years as far as value. Now, this is also doesn't have a campaign, but I mean, I've probably put, if you average out 2 hours a night into Blackout, and I've had it for about a month now, we've got a lot of hours racked up into Blackout already.
Yeah. I mean, there's a, I don't know, not necessarily a campaign, but a story to it, to Black Ops 4.
Oh, those missions, yeah.
Yeah, like you can do these like side mission things that it's more of a tutorial to things. But it gives you kind of this overarching story. I've kind of gone through about a third of them, and it's kind of an interesting story, to be honest. So if you want to find a story, it's not the worst thing to go through and go through those missions and just knock out a few things and kind of learn out some of the items and things work.
I think the one thing I will say is that I think Blackout has a pretty steep learning curve in that there are so many weapons, so many attachments, they're all just kind of thrown at you, and you have no idea which one is a better weapon. And they're not based on real, I mean, they're based on real guns, but they're not named as real weapons
Yeah, that's a whole
necessarily.
licensing thing. None of the games want to pay the licensing to the gun companies for that stuff anymore.
Well, and so that makes it a little bit challenging, I think, for new players to just drop into Blackout if you've been playing PUBG in particular. But yeah, I mean, it is a fantastic game. I would love to do more of the zombies mode because I think that's, that progression gameplay is probably a little more my personal interest. But I'm glad to have spent the $60 and have kind of all three in one package.
It's a great game.
It's a lot of fun.
I had a Switch game that I wanted to throw in there. I really enjoyed Mario v. Rabbids. This was a turn-based tactical game. Some people call it more of a puzzle game almost because there's usually, one or two optimum strategies for a level. But you can kind of muddle through even if you're not doing it the perfect play. And it's got that silly kind of Nintendo fun charm to it while still managing to be a decent little tactics game. So I certainly recommended it for anybody who is looking for another game for the Switch. And it is a Switch exclusive. Hop, did you have any? You touched on a couple of the retro bundles that have come out this year.
Yeah, there's a few. So there was the Sega Genesis Collection, which is pretty good. At launch, it had some issues, but they patched it right away. They added scan lines at full screen, which is just nice. It simulates that old cathode ray tube set that we all know and love that didn't have any input lag. And the online play got smoothed out a little bit, unless you're playing your friend that lives in Eastern Canada, then it's going to have some lag. There was the Street Fighter Collection came out earlier this year, and that was really good. Again, it's not without its faults. The version of Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo is the wrong ROM, which causes some issues in game balance. The third I just remembered right now is that Capcom, it's a digital release on Steam, PS4, and Xbox One. I don't think it's hit Switch yet, but it's the Capcom Beat 'em Up Collection. And it's got a bunch of cool games like Knights of the Round, Final Fight, King of Dragons, Captain Commando, a bunch of those games where you would go to the arcade and play co-op with your buddy. You can do it online. It's pretty fun. They patched that and added a scanline filter as well, which wasn't available at launch for some reason. Yeah, so I love all those. 16-bit is like my jam. Like, I love the Neo Geo. I could probably spend 4 hours just talking about the Neo Geo, but I won't start because then it won't stop.
Fair enough, fair enough. One other one that's kind of a weird entry perhaps into this list, but I think it's worth mentioning, is Xbox Game Pass. There are a lot of games that for the Super Mega Deluxe version are $100 plus now, and Game Pass is $100 for the year, and you're getting over 100 games, including all of Microsoft's new releases at launch, day and date. I love it because it guarantees that I have a bunch of games to play with my kids. It guarantees that if I know somebody with an Xbox who maybe doesn't have a ton of games, that at least if they have Game Pass, we'll have something to play together. And so I found it to be really great at just bringing gamers together, which I think is always a nice thing to see. Hop, are you a Game Pass subscriber?
I am by game sharing. So yes. It works with game share. I've installed a scant few games. My gaming time is so limited that unless somebody says, "Hey, play this with me," I may not install it. I mean, I look at it every once in a while. But again, like those games with gold games, if I don't think I'm gonna play it, I don't even install it. That's what I said. I'm excited to try Strange Brigade because, like, you guys are playing it. Yeah, that'll be cool.
What about you, Fenrir?
I mean, Game Pass is definitely a massive value, especially when you catch a deal on the Game Pass. I mean, I just saw the $70 for a year. I mean, it's $10 a month if you pay it month by month, but $70 for a year, that's $50 off, and you get 100 games. You get all the different things there. I mean, I'm getting the opportunity to play through Quantum Break right now. It's slow because I, like Hop said, I only have limited time to play because of responsibilities. So, it's just kind of cool to be able to pull up a game, play it for a little bit, and then move on. I mean, if you can kind of work your way through a game every couple months, you've paid for Game Pass for an entire year, especially with the way that first party games are coming out on Game Pass. I mean, when Crackdown 3 hits, I'm pretty sure that's all I'll be playing for a little while.
Yeah, and it's cool that they're letting you pre-install the Game Pass first
Especially
party
that.
releases. Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
But that's just Microsoft listening to its fan base. I mean, everybody's been clamoring for that for months now. Why can't I pre-install Sea of Thieves? Why can't I pre-install State of Decay 2? And here it comes. So I really think that Game Pass is going to be the future of games in a way. I mean, we're going to start talking about games releasing on Game Pass that are not Microsoft related. I mean, actually, that's already happening now, but I can't think of any games that that's doing that. But Game Pass is a heck of a deal.
Oh my gosh. Robocraft Infinity was date at launch. Mutant Year Zero will be in this week. There's a few others that I can't think of off the top of my head, but it's happening. Oh, sorry, the fact that Microsoft's saying their sales for games that go on to Game Pass actually increase is amazing to me. I think that indicates we'll see a lot of games coming to Game Pass in the future. All right, so any last thoughts before we call it a show?
No, it's been fun. I mean, it's been like a night of playing Diablo minus the Diablo and a more focused discussion.
Yes,
That's
yes.
very true.
One segment I threatened Fenrir with was a hour of my life where we pick a Game Pass game and we play it for an hour and come on the show and compare notes. So I think we'll see if we can work that in the next show or two. Holiday schedule permitting. I'm looking forward to trying that out. So, of course, you can find us on theadultgamer.com. There's links to our Discord there. There's links to our Amazon affiliate links if you want to help support what Tag is doing, the community, keeping our website up and running. Use those Amazon affiliate links. It gives the site a little kickback from Amazon. It doesn't cost you anything, but it sure helps out. So there's links for both the US and Canada up there if you're a big Amazon buyer. That would sure help out. All right, guys, thank you very much. Really appreciate you coming on, Hop, for our inaugural podcast, being our guinea pig slash guest host.
Oh yeah, I'm down to come back.
Absolutely. Well, we hope to do this as a kind of a every other week schedule and have a new guest host every week from the community, because I think that's what we're all about is, bringing gamers together. That's what I love about Tag most of all. So, Benner, any last thoughts as my esteemed co-host?
I just think, feel free to hit me up on Xbox Live, Fenrir 765. Like I said, I'm mainly playing some Call of Duty Black Ops 4 Blackout mode specifically, as well as throwing down some Red Dead, maybe doing some Red Dead Online. Find me with some Diablo 3 here and there, and just hit me up there.
Sounds good. I'm at mellified.com, Mellified. That has all my gamer contact info. And then, of course, I'm on the Tag Discord pretty much constantly. A little scary. Hop, any special way you want people to reach out to you?
No, you can just find me at on our Tag Discord channel. It's the only Discord I'm on. Other than that, you can hit me up on our the Adult Gamer Reddit that we have. That's linked from the adultgamer.com. Those two avenues would be great.
Fantastic. All right, thanks guys. Appreciate it.
All right,
Have
have
a
a good
great
one.
night.
It was a good time. Take it easy.